We all think about what we eat. We plan our meals or count carbs or do any number of other things when it comes to what we put into our bodies. But do you ever think about the flavor of what you consume? Sure you do. What we eat or drink either tastes good or it doesn't. In fact, taste is the number one consideration in what we consume. Yet, there is more to it than just like or dislike, and there's even a whole industry dedicated to it. Flavor is memory, flavor is feeling, flavor is science, flavor is art, flavor is McCormick Flavor Solutions. I'm Randy Donovan, and welcome to our Flavor University podcast, where we explore the science, artistry, and industry behind flavor. Well, welcome back to Flavor University. I am Randy Donovan, your host, and today we are talking about all things sauces, dips, dressings, and spreads. The unsung heroes that bring dishes to life. From global inspirations to fast-moving LTO flavor drops, we are going to explore how these condiments and special extras create the magic that keeps consumers coming back for more. So grab a spoon, a cracker, or a chip, and it is time to dip in. So today I have two fantastic guests with us who are going to walk us through this incredible world of truly one of my favorites, kind of the condiments and the sauces and the dips and spreads that really are this incredible extra layer of flavor to all of the things that we eat. Personally, when you open my fridge, it is jam-packed with more condiments. They are both nodding their heads right now with me. More condiments probably than food. So first, I have Erica. Erica, can you introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about your background and what you do here for us at McCormick Flavor Solutions.
Absolutely, Randy. I am Erica James. I'm an innovation scientist here. I work in the Geneva location. I've been in the food industry for almost 13 years now. I spent about 5 years developing salad dressings and sauces for mostly food service customers. So that's where some of my expertise comes from. And I've been in the flavor industry for about 5 years now, but I'm very new to McCormick. I've been here for about 4 months.
Wow. You are fresh to us. So lots of awesome new ideas. And Roger, how about you?
Yep. My name is Roger. I am the senior product manager for Savory, which covers obviously sauces, dressings, dips, marinades, spreads, etc., but all other savory segments as well, except for pet and snacks. That's the only other one I don't cover. But yeah, so I've been with McCormick for about 2.5 years, been in industry for about 15. My entire experience in marketing and product management has all been in food and flavor ingredients. So glad to be here. And I've been a foodie for my entire life. So this is right up my alley.
I love that. And I know just from our own personal conversations, the three of us all love food, flavors, snacks. And, you know, when we've talked, that's what we have talked about. Oh, you know, what are you cooking right now? What are you trying? Where have you been? So I think that really, just to kick off that foodie aspect of it all, I think really taps into sauces and dips, and there is definitely something about that. So I guess kind of I would start right there. What do either of you have kind of a feeling about what kind of that taps into there? What makes a sauce or a dip lead into that aspect of it?
I mean, I think from my perspective, one of the things that is especially interesting to me about this category is that it taps into a couple different things that consumers really like. Number one is customization. It gives them the ability to very easily change the flavor of something. It's very low risk. You can, you know, buy a bottle of some kind of sauce or a dressing, et cetera, maybe a couple of bucks versus buying an entire meal that you may not like, right? And the other thing is it gives the ability for consumers to explore, right? Flavor exploration is very big with consumers today. They're very, very flavor fluent is, I think, the term that we've been using lately. So the ability to be able to try new things and explore the world through flavors of sauces, dressings, dips, marinades is a great way for consumers to try that.
I think you hit the nail on the head there, Roger. That is all absolutely true. And so I think sauces, condiments, largely, right? They are a flavor powerhouse. And when we think of the word flavor here in the flavor industry, but also the food industry at large, we tend to think of the little bottles of liquid flavors or the little containers with powdered flavors. But you know what happens when you say flavor to a consumer? They're probably thinking of their favorite hot sauce or their favorite salad dressing. To a consumer, honestly, sauces are flavor. That's how they add flavor.
I love that. That's so interesting. And when you just said their favorite, somebody on our team, you know, perfect example, loves ranch.
And I know who you're talking about.
Kelly, shout out to Kelly. Kelly, not in a you know, bad way, puts ranch on everything, but truly loves ranch. And she has the perfect complement and even brand or restaurant of ranch that she likes with this sandwich or these fries or this salad. And, you know, I always use this word kind of in a funny way, but in a respectful use of ranch. It's not like she's dousing it, but she's very respectful about it. You know, there's kind of this emotional and nostalgic connection with a lot of these. And when you said somebody's favorite, that's what I think of. And I guess as we talk about that, and that's so interesting, Erica, when you say they have their favorite, you know, bottle or packet, what are you guys seeing kind of between that nostalgic flavor, you know, people are seeing to what's trending right now? Kind of what's the bridge to that?
I mean, I think part of it, actually, I'm just looking at some data that I recently pulled. One of the things I think is interesting is that 70% of U.S. consumers would rather eat a comfort food for the rest of their lives than a gourmet meal, right? So comfort food in that sort of nostalgic environment is something, it's a deep emotional connection, right? Many times it's something that you have from your childhood. I remember when I actually interviewed at McCormick, one of the interview questions, and this tells you about kind of how we interview at McCormick and the things that we talk about, what's your favorite dish, right? And I've been around the world at both with work and without work and tried cuisine from all over the world, right? And I told them my favorite dish was meatloaf, which sounds like such a weird, again, it's kind of ranchy, right? It's sort of that idea. And I think there were maybe a couple of shocked faces in the room that I would say something like meatloaf is my favorite food, but it's amazing. And it reminds me of being a kid because it's something my mother made, my grandmother made. So it's that emotional connection that people have to food. And of course, we're not talking about meatloaf here. We're talking about sauces, but it's the same idea of that emotional connection that people have to food. And nostalgia is a huge piece of that. And whether it's something you experienced firsthand as a nostalgic thing from, you know, the 60s, 70s, 80s, whatever your childhood was, or something that you connect to nostalgia, I think it's just something that consumers, that emotional connection cannot be denied with food and flavors in general. So that's how I feel about it.
Absolutely. I think that there's so much power in that connection and connecting each other to that. And we're especially seeing that so much right now. I know we kind of, I don't want to talk about it again, but COVID brought so much of that nostalgia and our roots back and just kind of that appreciation for those comfort flavors and sensations. You know, I think that's, you know, obviously a given, we all agree on that, but I love that meatloaf reference. And when you talk about the condiment with that, I always think of kind of that sticky glazed ketchup, brown sugar flavor. That's such a classic right there. So when you talk about, you know, when we talk about trending flavors, that kind of always leads me to think of, in so many restaurants right now, we're seeing kind of, you know, these LTOs, limited time offers, are such a huge push on restaurant shelves, whether it's seasonal or, you know, limited time promotions. Any thoughts on why that works so well in this space and flavors or, you know, sauces, dips, how that works for this area for consumers and companies?
Sauces are relatively simple, right? They're when you think about switching in a new sauce at a restaurant versus switching in a new protein or switching in a new side or a totally new build on a dish, it's going to be a lot easier to do that sauce. So it's a lot more accessible. And then you can also take a sauce and transform multiple dishes, right? You can take a sandwich and maybe it's all ingredients you already had in the back of house. You put a new sauce on it. It's something completely different. It can become a dip for the fries or, you know, whatever chips or whatever side you have. So I just think that sauces, like we said, to consumers, they're flavor. So you can completely transform the flavor of something for a low investment.
Yeah, and I think that when you think about LTOs too, I think the other thing about it is that consumers are looking for new things, right? They want to try that sort of new item. And it leads me back to that comment I made earlier about, again, like as Erica said, low risk. It's the idea that I can try this brand new thing, and I'm absolutely guilty. I am the the most proto consumer there is, right? I'm like, if there's a new star that says new on it on a package, I'm throwing it in my cart. Same thing happens to me with restaurants. If it's telling me it's limited time, I'm like, well, I have to try it, right? If it's something that's only going to be here for a limited time, I need to go out and try it. So again, it's very low risk for customers. So if I'm a customer of a restaurant and they have a LTO, you know, I don't know, a Mexican flavored chicken breast or something with a Mexican sauce on top, maybe I'm not going to like that dish overall, but it's very low risk, right? I get to try it. It pulls me in because it's something that's brand new, that's only here for a little bit. So I need to try it. But again, still low risk. So that's how I think of LTOs in that way. Of it's very sort of, the immediacy is there. Like it's only going to be here for a short time, so I have to try it. But again, if it's not something I like, I don't have to worry about it for too long.
I love kind of how you describe that as low risk, and that also that time, you know, oh, I have to get there. It's limited time, because I am, I don't know, basically a middle schooler at heart. I don't ever want to miss out on anything. If everybody else is doing it, I still have this, oh, everybody else had the, like you said, the Mexican chicken breast. I have to get there. I have to be a part of that moment. So that is so true. And it has such a pull to be a part of that moment. And again, you mentioned, you know, Erica, that you can, you know, whether it's the sauce on the sandwich, the sauce on the fries, again, that customization element as well. And again, kind of low risk, you know, you don't like it, don't dip again. It's not a life commitment. So I think there's so much to that. So when you, as Erica, as with what you do in your role, and you're in the lab and you're developing this, customer comes to you and they want to work on a sauce, how do you kind of approach that? How do you help them in planning, you know, an LTO sauce?
So it kind of depends on how far along they are. Do they have a concept that they want help executing, or do they just, we want to do a new fall LTO next year, can you help us think of it, right? So do we help them brainstorm and give them data behind why they should maybe think about those concepts? Okay, and we settle into a concept. So say we've gotten to that point. Maybe it's a varietal of a ranch. Okay, so is this going to be a shelf-stable ranch, or is it going to be something that stays refrigerated? And so on our customers then, they need to think about how do they currently do it, right? And just make it as seamless as possible. If no one in back of house is mixing up sauces, let's not start now, right? So let's flavor it and let's get it made and sent to the restaurants in Gallen, so it can be very easy on the operators, and we can have a successful LTO. So just considerations like, okay, so like I said, refrigerated, shelf stable, other things. Is it going to go onto one product? Do you want to use it in multiple ways? Because that's going to affect the viscosity of the product too. And the more, when you're working with your flavor supplier, the more you can tell them about your product and what you're working on and everything you know about it, they're going to be able to recommend the perfect flavor for you, right? The right flavor profile, the right format. And it's going to really make it go fast, because that's kind of the key in LTOs, right? Sometimes maybe we're able to plan them a year in advance. Sometimes we're trying to take advantage of a trend or something like that. We're trying to do a collaboration with a movie that's coming out. You don't have as much lead time on those. So really lean on your suppliers and let them help you.
That's really interesting. I don't think, even being in this industry, I'm a little embarrassed to admit this, I don't think I really think of an LTO as how quickly it actually is sometimes taking place. You know, I know that they were filming Wicked 2 years ago, but on the end of how quickly I got to such and such restaurant, you know, to get whatever, that it really might have been developed that quickly, as opposed to when they were filming. You know, some of these ideas come up a lot more quickly than
now in the age of social media, right? Something could take off and take fire and go viral. And do you want to be a part of that? If you want to, you know, that's got to move quickly. So lean on your suppliers, right? They're the subject matter experts in what they offer to you.
And you just never know, you know, you said, so I'm certainly, when you think about some of these things that are launching as LTOs, they are thinking about it pretty far in advance, right? But you hit the nail on the head when you talked about the fact that sometimes something goes viral. Think about Chili Crisp, for example. You know, it's been around for probably hundreds of years in Asia, but it really hit in America probably four-ish years ago, maybe five-ish years ago. And it's just taken off, And there is a chili crisp product all the time being launched. And whether it's in a sauce format or not, right? Maybe it's a chili crisp mayonnaise or a chili crisp seasoned potato chip. Whatever the format is, I mean, you really had to, if you wanted to get in on that thing, right? If you wanted to get in on chili crisp, you really had to move quick because people are moving quicker than you are all the time. So you really had, you said, as you said, Eric, you have to lean on your suppliers and really have that conversation in depth to understand exactly how you want that product to come to market and to come to life. So yeah, got to move quick sometimes or you're going to miss it.
Really interesting and powerful, and those relationships. And I know, you know, that's a huge part of the industry is the relationships, and a huge part of what we do is the relationships and the trust and just that working together, you know, knowing our product and our customers knowing their products. So that's a really interesting kind of aspect to it that I don't think we always all think about. You know, Erica, like you said, just knowing your viscosity, knowing, you know, shelf stable, things like that. So thank you. That's great. So you're talking about kind of the parts of that and how that comes, you know, to get the product out there. I like when you said, you know, if somebody in the back of the restaurant isn't mixing sauces, you know, per order, let's, you know, get it out in gallons. That makes a ton of sense. What about, you know, things like collaborations and marketing? And, you know, we just talked about the speed of that. But what about, you know, I guess for you, Roger, things that maybe it's not a collaboration between a trend of a movie or something like that, just about flavors. So how do you kind of keep your eye on those kind of trends? What, you know, things like, you know, what's going to be hot next year flavor wise?
Well, I mean, that's one of the things that, you know, I've been doing it without doing it for years, right? As I said, I love food and beverage. And so I'm always reading and kind of consuming information and media just to kind of on my own, right? Just to kind of understand what's happening because I love it so much. But that's something in the marketing function that we really pay a lot of attention to, right? So we're on TikTok, we're on Instagram, we're on Facebook, we're looking at publications, we're, you know, seeing what people are watching on television, following different restaurants on social media. So there are so many inputs to kind of see what is happening, and then it's just distilling that information. Really kind of like, are we seeing a trend? You know, are a lot of people talking about X ingredient, or a lot of people talking about some sort of specific region? You know, that's kind of where it all starts, is it starts to bubble up from the sort of kind of far out there sort of ideas. And as it slowly gets more popular, then maybe it latches on. And this is not a sauce, but I think of Dubai chocolate is sort of that idea where it literally just, it was kind of a sort of fringe idea for a very long time. And then it just exploded. Look at that little tiny sort of bubbling that you see kind of on the far horizon and kind of predicting, is it going to happen? Is it going to keep going? Because they don't all keep going. I think that's the other thing that you have to pay attention to too. There, are we always right? No, nobody is. But, you know, you really have to pay attention to that very early sort of adopter kind of consumer and what they're talking about. And then those influencers, that's the culture we're living in today, is influencers. So really understanding what they're talking about, who they're talking to, and how much influence that person has. So.
Absolutely. Anything either of you kind of have your eye on, or a flavor you're watching or loving or not loving?
I mean, I love everything. Come on, Rick. I think that honestly, one of the places that I think is still fairly new for a lot of American consumers anyway. But I'm going to put my little cards on the table here for it. I think African cuisine is something that is going to eventually hit here in the U.S. It's still here. It's here now. But it's very small. It's very sort of in the adoptions part of the cycle for food. But I think Africa, and it's a huge continent. There are so many countries within Africa that you can explore, right? So it's a massive place. And I don't want to monolith it and think of it just one cuisine, because there's lots of different places to kind of explore there. And sauces and dressings are, you know, sauces in general in Africa, there are tons of them. And using ingredients that we all know and love, right? It's just being put together in a different way. So I just feel like that's a place that I see a lot of influence coming in. And I think that's going to be hitting in the next 3, 4, 5 years, I'd say.
Sure. That's just a great example. And like you said, of ingredients that we are familiar with, but in just different kind of combinations and layer, you know, these amazing layerings of flavors and blends, which is always just an amazing presentation of flavor. And on our end, from our background as a spice company to our, you know, interpretation as a flavor company, just kind of a joy, truthfully, to play with and represent. And how about you, Erica? What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I think just further leaning in, like, to not think of continents as monoliths, right? To start further leading into, and not even a country, right? A region of a country, right? So there's some of these areas that I think people are in general quite familiar with in this country, right? We're very familiar with Mexican cuisine and Asian cuisine, but like people want to get more granular. They want it to be more specific. I'm seeing a lot of interest in Filipino cuisine. Mm-hmm. And then as we talk about Mexican and other like Central and South American cuisines, like Peruvian and people, Americans are getting more and more comfortable with heat and spice, right? So the first few generations were maybe spicy ranch. And then we started moving to like Chipotle ranch and we got into habanero ranch, right? Which is quite spicy, but I think it's a pepper that many Americans at least understand and are familiar with, even if it's a little hot for them. So but I think people are like, okay, so what's next, right? Is it chile de árbol? Is it one of the Peruvian ones, ají panca, mm-hmm. ají amarillo, which has been very big for us here at McCormick,
yeah.
right? So I think it's just people want a story and they want to know exactly where it came from and why, and maybe why did they start using that pepper or does, you know, when did they start cooking with it? And did it travel as people traveled the globe? So I'm just seeing that people are all craving a story. So it's just regionality is what I'm seeing and learning the story behind why we're using an ingredient.
I love that so much. I think the story, obviously that's why we're here on the podcast, you know, the stories behind our food absolutely fascinate me and the people telling them. So, you know, thank you for being here because all of our stories are what make all of this. And what both of you just said is exactly why we're here, why all of this is so special, because these stories from these regions and the people that bring all of this to life is what this is all about. So what about, so kind of leading into that, and this can go whether it's really mainstream or kind of in these little segments of flavor and, you know, whether it's kind of populations, what about cult favorites? What are some things that come to mind for you for, you know, this can kind of be flavor, this can kind of come out of, you know, different restaurants or brands, but you know, sometimes within flavors we have that. Any ideas for you guys?
I guess I'm thinking of a few, and I'm thinking of two big camps and sauces, right? We've said ranch a million times, but it is the great American condiment. But just the ferocity with which people defend their specific ranch, right? Like they have their favorite, and that's the paradigm of ranch to them. And often they're quite different from each other. So I just always think of that. I mean, I also think of hot sauces are also in that camp where, like, if you love a hot sauce, you really love it. It's part of who you are, and that's something that's unique to sauces in kind of the savory food space. That's something we tend to see more in beverages. Like people kind of define themselves by their Starbucks order or the cola that they drink, things like that. And we don't see that as much in food, but we do in sauces. People say, oh, no, I have to have sriracha, or no, I have to have buffalo sauce, or no, it has to be Tabasco. I carry it in my purse. So I just think it's tied into who we are. And so I think of those are the big ones to me that I see.
Yeah, and I'll play off of that a little bit too, because I think one of the things that I found interesting is, and you said, you know, we know a lot about heat at McCormick, and we have a whole series of presentations just about heat. And one of the things that one of the data points that I saw in there that I found very interesting was how much younger consumers, especially Gen Z consumers, see themselves as a hot sauce connoisseur, right? Mm-hmm. And I read that data point. I'm like, I'm not really sure I understand what that means, right? It kind of confused me a little bit. And Erica, you brought it up, and it was perfect. It's like, well, are you a Texas Pete's? Are you a Cholula? Are you, you know, a Victoria? Are you just a standard Frank's? Right? I think that's kind of what it is. It's almost like a wine idea, right? So a certain wine with a certain kind of food, right? And that is, and I thought to myself, I'm like, well, that's kind of what I do. Like for me, I'm a Frank's guy, right? I've been a Frank's guy my entire life, but I don't put it on certain things, right? Frank's for me is like eggs, I put it in like soups or chili, things like that. But sriracha is Asian food only. So on fried rice, it's in, my kung pao or whatever. So I thought, I guess I am a hot sauce connoisseur. I'm the same sort of idea, right? I'm like, it's like almost like wine. There are so many different flavor profiles that can come with a hot sauce. And absolute defenders, as you said, people are putting it in their purse, right? There are songs about it. Beyonce talks about it in one of her songs, right? So I think the idea of it is that it's an identity thing for you. It's like, you know, the ranch thing is absolutely true. The hot sauce thing is absolutely true as well. So good points.
Yes, I love that so much. For my birthday one year, I love mustard. And my sister gave me a huge box of just all these different mustards. And at dinner, or like when I'm making dinner, or if I'm making lunch or whatever, and I'll say to my husband or my kids, you know, like, oh, can you get the mustard? Hand me the mustard out of the fridge. And if they hand me the wrong one, I'll be like, yellow Dijon, or like, oh, no, I need country Dijon. Oh, like it's American.
It's still the same day. Very dainty.
So yeah, I love those within the variances, and that's just such a kind of just all of that, those cult differences, and then kind of that brand loyalty within there as well. So those are great examples. So here's a question, kind of flipping back to the LTO and the sauces, but again, when we're talking about these cult favorites, what do you think kind of builds that winning combination? So say you mentioned Frank's, perfect example. We have our classic Frank's, and then we have all these variations. What do you think makes that winning combo where somebody says, oh, I love this Frank's for my eggs, but I love this one for a fried chicken sandwich? Or do you think there's a secret sauce to the secret sauce?
I don't know. I mean, I think that there is, it comes down to personal preference, obviously, like what you grew up with or kind of what your culture was growing up. You know, as I said, I was a Frank's guy, and that's what my mom always used, and that's what I always use, right? So I think that's part of it. I think the other thing is, if we're talking about variations on a classic, right? That sort of classic with a twist, I think that it's really just, again, that flavor exploration, being able to combine things that are sort of complementary in a way, right? And maybe, Erica, you can talk about it more from a scientific perspective. But for me, it's really just, are those flavors complementary? Can I create something that's harmonious, that can be put together in a way that doesn't make me like make a yuck face, right? Or you know, when we spit it out. It's really just about complementary flavors and sort of those cuisine types, maybe even that are complementary, that you can put together that a consumer would love. Science, Erica, go for it.
Yeah, and I don't know how scientific this is, but I think often you can kind of, if you're looking at yourself as a brand, what is that hero ingredient? Like, what is core to you? And kind of keep that across your different sauces, and consumers will know, like, I'm always going to have that kind of essence of that brand, right? So are we always going to have this signature strong black pepper note in our ranch? So even if we make a new Chipotle ranch, that's still hanging out in the background. If you're doing a hot sauce, are you always going to have some cayenne in there, even if you release maybe a habanero or a Chipotle? There's always going to be maybe that background note that kind of signifies your brand and who you are and ties everything together. So I think that's one way to think about it.
That's really interesting. I when you just said that, you know, a black pepper note in the background, honestly, I never really put that together, that kind of that's what ties them all. Even though, as you said that, it was like a light bulb just went off, you know, like, oh, that's, yes, absolutely. Wow. But I just never put that together. And basically, I'm a chef. Is that how you kind of work on that then? Are you using a base and adapting from there when you work with customers? Is that how you guys formulate, or, you know,
often
what's your process?
Yeah, it depends on what works best for the customer, right? We want to help our customers. So how do we fit into their development life cycle? So often, you develop a really good relationship with a customer, and they're going to send you in base, right? And they're going to say, we're working on a new variation. This is how far we've gotten. You know, we think it needs a little bit of this. We really like all the notes. They just need to become brighter and come more forward. Or, oh, we've added this garlic puree, but we feel we need more garlic, help us out. So often, you know, that's one way to work, right? They get it pretty far, and then you do kind of your last mile development to help them. And other customers are a little more self-developers, self-formulators. So that's about communication, right? They're going to reach out to you and say, I need a lemon flavor. Okay. And hopefully they give you more descriptors and more information beyond that, because that's going to help us send the best lemon flavor the first time and save our customers time, right? So is it, what are you looking for? Peeliness, juiciness, where are you adding it, right? Is it a really acidic product already? So we're going to want to bring you lemon aromatics without any more acidity, right? So that we're not overpowering your sauce. That's why if you could ever send a base over to your suppliers, specifically your flavor suppliers, it's going to help them and help you so much. It saves so much time.
That makes sense. So, Erica, when you're working with a customer and helping them kind of guide what they are developing, how do you help them along the way? Is there anything like a flavor palette or a flavor toolbox that you can send them to give them options for what they are, you know, seeking?
Yeah. Yeah, and we can do that in a few different ways. It just kind of depends on what they're looking for, right? Sometimes the question starts really, really broad, right? We want to get into more Asian sauces than we have in the past. So we'll start with something broad and kind of give them different camps to think about, right? Like this, like you could think about soy sauce, right? You could think about lemongrass, things like that. So that's kind of a starting point, right? But then we can get a lot more granular. So maybe they are like saying that they want to launch an orange vinaigrette. But they're not sure. They don't have descriptors. They don't have a gold standard yet. They just know that's the direction they want to go in. So we can send them something like a little orange toolkit, right? So it can have one that's really juicy, one that has more of those zesty notes, one that's maybe has some from a specific part of the region of the world, right? That has very specific notes, like a Brazilian orange, something like that. And then we can talk about, and we can even engage sensory too, right? And we can talk about a flavor lexicon. We can get on the same page. And this is what we mean when we say floral. This is what we mean when we say juicy, things like that.
That's great. And you mentioned sensory and kind of a flavor lexicon. So everybody's on the same page. I think that's something that we do so well, and that collaboration that we all have here and bringing to our customers and our teams to all work together. I guess, Roger, can you speak to that a little bit? This being in on the marketing side, where we are doing so much communication through that and with that.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm going to kind of build off of what Erica was just talking about. One of the things that we sometimes see, and ranch is a perfect example. I know I keep going back to ranch, but it's a perfect example of, for this, what I'm going to say here is that there are times when a customer will come to us and say, we're thinking of launching a line extension, right? We want to do a new ranch dressing, or we want to do a new version of X, right? Let's see what's in the marketplace, right? So we'll start with a market analysis to understand where the white space is. Is there a ton of competition doing a sriracha ranch, for example? If that's the case, do you want to be ME2, or are you looking to stand out more on the shelf? So that's kind of where we will start with some of that stuff, right? To kind of help them along the way, especially when they don't know exactly where they want to go. And many times our customers will lean on us to kind of help along that thought process. And then it will lead into, and many times it does lean into. So let's say they've picked black pepper ranch, for example. Let's just go something very simple. And then it will go to Erica's team, and they will start pulling these different black pepper profiles. You know, is it a floral black pepper? Is it more of a white pepper? You know, that sort of idea, and giving them that idea. And then if they can't really decide from there, or they need more guidance, we will certainly pull in the sensory team, or we'll do consumer insights. We'll pull in actual consumers of ranch dressing and have them tell us what they want to see in a black pepper ranch. You know, there's so many different elements that can come into this to kind of help the customer along that process. There are certainly customers who can do it on their own. They don't need us for that kind of work, right? But many times these smaller customers don't have those resources available, or they don't have the time to do it, right? They'll lean on people like us to come out there and help them with that work. You know, so there are lots of different pieces or parts of the toolbox that we can pull from both a marketing perspective and a product development and the consumer sciences that we can all pull in to really help guide that customer to the right place.
That's awesome. I think that's one of my favorite parts truly of what we get to do is sort of that really specialized work with consumers and the surveys and things like that, because it's so interesting, really, just to kind of get out there and see what literally our neighbors of country wants in salad dressing and dip and a drink, because it's fun.
And sometimes they will surprise you. That's the thing I always find interesting, too, is that what we've seen is telling us that, you know, this is the place to go. And then you start talking to consumers or actual consumers of these products, and it's radically different, right? So it's just, that's one of the fun things about this job, is just to discover what consumers are looking for, what consumers are interested in, and the types of flavors that they want to see.
Absolutely. So we kind of talked about, you know, where you think we're headed. And we talked about, you know, those kind of big flavor concepts, but the future of flavor innovation, kind of some things I have sort of bullet points, thoughts on. We see a lot of hybrid sauces. Kind of what are your thoughts on, you think we're still going along the lines of, you know, things like spicy, sweet, tangy, creamy? You think that we're still headed there 2026?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think consumers are looking for complexity. They're looking for interest. They're looking for things that are different. And certainly when you fuse two things together, whether it's spicy and sweet or savory and sweet, again, sauces are a great place to do that because it is low risk and it's a great place to kind of explore different flavors. You can mix them and match them yourself at home, and many people do. So I think that's probably one aspect of it. I think the other aspect is multi-use. So if I can take something, and I know this is flavor, but the idea of being able to take something and use it in more than one way. Like, can I take that sauce and can I turn it into a soup? Can I take that sauce and turn it into a burger, you know, a burger topping or something? The ability to change things up and use them in new ways, I think, is something consumers are always looking for. And it just kind of ties into that idea of fusing things together.
That's awesome. Erica, do you have any thoughts on kind of that multi-use? You're nodding, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think what consumers really are looking for right now is value. So the more ways you can use one product, the better of an investment it seems like to put in your grocery cart when we're talking about, you know, consumers and retail products. And so, the brands can educate the consumer on other ways to use their product, right? So if you market something as a burger sauce, you know, help.
You're going to use it as a burger sauce.
They're going to put it on burgers. So make sure you can think about how you name it, right? It could be an anything sauce, or it could be a burger sauce. You got four of the recipes on the back that are burgers, right? Or a QR code that leads you to those things. So I think it's really important thinking about how to guide your consumer to use that sauce in as many different ways as possible.
That's great. That's a huge kind of area I see on like TikTok a lot, is these, they even have a funny name, something like Stupid Easy Dinners or something, and they'll show a sauce used as a soup, or, you know, like one pan dinners, like throw in dumplings and a bottle of, you know, a simmer sauce and some protein. And it's so smart, you know, it's great. And the other thing that's so interesting is these are global flavors, which I think is amazing. Consumers now are educated and adventurous and open to just this amazing array of flavors that I don't think we saw even 5-10 years ago. It's a new world. It's very exciting. So So I guess some kind of takeaways, you know, kind of closing points for us. You know, we talked a lot about LTOs and, you know, kind of they are, I guess we would say, you know, kind of low risk, you know, offers and innovation tools for brands and consumers. You guys have any nodding, any kind of closing thoughts there?
Yeah, I mean, I just think that, as I said earlier, I think when you think about LTOs, it is certainly something that will draw consumers in, because as you said, you and I are very similar consumers, I think, Brandy, in that if I see something that's limited time or if it's got a new label on it, I'm going to pick it up because I don't want to miss out on that thing. So I think sauces are a great way to do that. You think about some of these large multinational corporations who are constantly launching new dips for nuggets or, you know, fries or what have you. If you miss out, you miss out. So hot mustard is one of my favorite chicken nugget dips. It's not available everywhere anymore. You can only get it in certain places. I see, Randy, I know you love mustard. So yeah, I mean, I was in California. It's still available. So if you get to California, you can go get some. But yeah, I mean, it's the ability to be able to have that thing and be part of that group, I think, is we all want to belong, right? I think that's sort of part of it. But yeah, I mean, again, it is a very low-risk thing. If I don't like it, I've spent $3, I can throw it away.
Absolutely. And then this is something you kind of mentioned, Erica, that flavor development is science and it's storytelling. Can you kind of wrap up that thought for us?
Yeah, that's why I became a food scientist, because I love science and creativity and I want to put them together. And so you need all of that, right, to create a successful launch, or whether it be permanent or an LTO. So you want to think about kind of all the practical things first, right? Like, what ingredients would help you execute on that flavor profile, and how can you source them in a way that is sustainable, like for your business, right? And will work if it's going into food service, it'll work in that actual restaurant, and it won't be something that's so painful that the operators will say, please, never again, right? So you need that part of it. You need that practical, the technical, and that's where your suppliers can help you with that and help you execute quickly. But it's storytelling, right? So that's where I think LTOs especially tell a story, right? Do we tie it to a specific season, right? The McRib is now a Christmas thing. I don't know when that started, but it didn't used to be. But now it's the most wonderful time of the year, and they're tying these two things together, right? So it's going to create memories like, hey, I was wearing my Christmas sweater when I got my McRib last year. I got to do it again. It's a tradition now, right? So, and whether you tie it into a story from like a movie or an album release from an artist, right? You're capitalizing on new fandom, right? Someone that maybe wasn't going to your restaurant before. If that's their favorite movie or their favorite artist, they're going in and you may get a new fan there. So it is. It's the ultimate. You got to bring both together. You need the science and you need the story for success.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I love that so much. Okay. So we always close out the podcast in honor of our previous host, Corey. We always close out with a kind of off the random question that kind of just pops in my head. So this podcast, I have to tell you though, I'm having a little trouble because there are so many that are coming to mind. So I can't decide if I want to know, if you were a condiment or a dip, what would you be? Or what would be your emotional, like, what was the LTO closest to your heart? I guess you can pick. Like, do you have one you remember from growing up, or even now? Is there one that really got you? Or like I said, if you were a condiment, what would you be? Or a sauce or a dip, what would you be?
I hate to go back to the McRib. I don't want to go to the McRib because that's not sauces. I mean, there's a great barbecue sauce that happens in the
But it does. They released the sauce on its own last year. And it sold out immediately.
I may have bought a Gallium Mountain.
But
I'm with the McRib down. Okay, so I'll say it.
It's
the McRib sauce.
It's the McRib barbecue sauce, because it is not the same as the dip that you use for nuggets. It is not the same. But yes, there was an LTO that you could get. You had to go online at a certain time of day and sign up for it. And yes, I got a bottle of McDonald's barbecue sauce from the McRib, and I used probably half of it before it went bad. So yeah, I'll say that. And I did have my McRib this year.
All right. I'm extra. I'm going to answer both. So, okay. I think I would be mole.
Ooh, fancy.
I'm Mexican. I'm sweet. I'm a little spicy. There's some complexity going on. And I like to wear a lot of different colors, and mole comes in a lot of different colors, right? So I think I'm mole. I think that is my spirit sauce. The LTO that got away, it was maybe like 5 years ago now, if not longer. Buffalo Wild Wings did this pumpkin ale wing sauce. And so like everyone's like, oh my gosh, they made a pumpkin beer wing sauce. And I was like, exactly, they made it for me because I love pumpkin beer and I love chicken wings. And it was really nice. It was a really like unique way to do that sweet and savory. And it was great. And so some of the Buffalo Wild Wings LTOs come, they get so popular, they put them on the menu permanently. Obviously didn't happen with that one, but I do think about it often.
Well, no, I feel like I need to eat some of the others.
Do I was just going to say you have to.
So as Erica was talking about it, I thought, well, what would fit me? Peanut sauce, like Thai peanut sauce, a little nutty, a little spicy, a little sweet, you know? And I love Thai food in general, but yeah, peanut sauce from Thailand, amazing. Yeah.
Those are both absolutely fantastic. I love both of them. And you're both multi-layered. Those are complex, delicious sauces. I love it. Well, thank you both. This was so fun. And I was truly so excited when I saw this, kind of topic pop up because I'm very passionate about sauces. And I love both of you. You are like two of my favorite people. You're spoken. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. So I hope this was as wonderful for our listeners and our flavor fans. Thank you so much for being with us today. So whatever your vibe, if you're into dolloping, drizzling, slathering, or smearing, sauces, dips, dressings, and spreads are driving some of the most exciting innovation and LTO momentum in the market. Thank you again for joining us today. Whether you're a seasoned professional or just starting to explore the world of food science, there's always more to discover about the flavors that shape our experiences. Keep exploring, keep tasting, and keep pushing flavor forward. Until next time, I'm Randy Donovan, and this is Flavor University, where every flavor tells a story.